everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Got a nice conversation with Sheila Roberts up there, the romance writer Sheila Roberts, had some wonderful things to say, I think, about the writing process and her life and singing and how these things all collided. So you can check that out at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. We're located here in the Great Northwest, which is a hotbed of writing and writers and reading, but it doesn't matter if you live far away. If you join the PNWA, you can listen to their monthly meetings that are held every month. They're monthly, where all topics about the craft and the business of writing are discussed by top professionals within the industry. And if you're a member, no matter where you live, you can tune into these via the magic of the internet and listen in. It's well worth your time, and it's a very reasonable yearly cost. So if you're interested in joining the PNWA, go to pnwa.org. I should say that today we're doing another – well, I was going to do a Fearless Writing Masterclass. It's probably going to be a little different. But if you are interested in fearless writing and what I've been talking about lately, these Fearless Writing Masterclasses, I will be teaching one of those classes at Edmonds – at Write on the Sound. Write on the Sound. It's a writer's conference in Edmond, Washington, just a little north of Seattle. Lovely little town on the coast. And I'll be teaching the Fearless Writing Masterclass on Friday, September 30th. The conference really starts on the 1st of October, but the masterclasses are done the day before. And so if you sign up, well, you can come in. We can do this face-to-face. I do love teaching this face-to-face, not just over the phone. So that is Write on the Sound, Write on the Sound, W-R-I-T-E, on the Sound in Edmonds, Washington, October, well, it's October 1st at the conference, and the masterclass is on September 1st. So today, unfortunately, my friend and co-host, R.J. Jeffries, really, he can't be with us. He has a family situation going on. All our thoughts and prayers are with him. I hope all is well, and I hope to see him again next week, but he couldn't be with us today. And I can't really do the master class without him. I need Jeff. So I've got a little something else in mind, a little something I'd like to talk to you all about. However, if you're listening in and you'd like to post a question on the chat room, feel free to do so, and I will read it and try to answer it. Or you can call in to 661-449-9357, 661-449-9357, and I will take your call. But if no one calls in, that's okay, too, because I want to talk to you about something something that very germane, I think, to fearless writing. And I wrote a short piece about this for the Huffington Post and for Author Magazine last week, and I wanted to elaborate on it today. And I think it's one of the fundamental fears that all writers face. And I think it's fundamental not just it's really fundamental to everybody. It's just particularly acute in writers. You know, if you've heard me talk about the subject, the number one fear facing most writers, although it's kind of, we're not conscious of it most of the time, but the thought of what will other people think of our work. You can't write fearlessly. You can't write fearlessly if you're wondering what anyone thinks about what you've written, because all those people who you might be wondering about, the agents and the editors and the book groups and the reviewers, anyone really who's not you, who might read your work and you hope will like your work, they aren't there with you. The only one there writing is you. And so all you're wondering about whether this one will like it or that one will like it takes you out of your creative confidence. It takes you out of that creative flow that you have to enter to write fearlessly. And so most of fearless writing has to do with how to direct your attention towards what I call your unconditional love for the story you're telling. So you love the story you're telling just because you love it. You don't love it because of the success it will bring you. You don't love it because people will like it. You don't love it because it will sell a lot of copies or because you'll win awards. No, you love it only because only because you love it. That's unconditional love for the story you're telling. And for me, the easiest way, the best tool I've come up with to keep my attention where it needs to be are the two questions: what do I want to say and have I said it? Because these two questions are questions that I can answer. What do I want to say focuses my attention on my own curiosity, the power of my own curiosity, the value of my own curiosity. What am I interested in writing about? What story interests me most? Which essay would I like to write? It's very important for writers to value their own curiosity. It is your greatest creative tool. You will never write better than when you are deeply, personally, unconditionally curious about something, interested in it, only because you're interested in it. You will never be more alive and creative and original than when you focus your full attention on what you're most interested in, simply because you're interested in it and for no other reason than that. So what do I want to say? And then the second question is, have I said it? So have you translated what you've written onto the page, into language, into a poem, essay, story, so that what is on the page is as interesting as what is in your mind? Is this as interesting on the page as it is in my mind? Have I said it? This keeps you from asking questions like, is this any good? What will other people think of it? And so on. So these two questions, what do I want to say and have I said it? If I can ask those two questions and not ask, is this any good? What will people think of it? Will this get me an agent? Will this get me that big contract I wanted? Will this hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list? Whatever the questions. Those questions can't be answered in the writing. The only thing you should be worried about while you're writing is, what's the story you want to tell and have you told it? And that is most of what writers contend with when writing. The fear of what other people will think of their work is the number one distraction to all writers, not just beginning writers, very established writers. I remember Andre Debuse, one of my favorite authors to talk to about the writing process, great novelist, and wrote The House of Sand and Fog, the wonderful memoir Townie, Dirty Love. And a wonderful teacher, and he talked about when you finally do begin to have some success, and he, not only did he write these award-winning books, and he was on Oprah several times, and he was very public, and he said the bright lights of publicity can be distracting too. Knowing that all these people are going to read it can get you thinking about it. Amy Tan said the same thing to me when I interviewed her. She said that, you know, getting paid all that money is wonderful, but it also puts a lot of pressure on. So no matter where you are in your writing journey, the sort of threat, the idea of what other people will think about what you write is a distraction. So much of fearless writing is about keeping your attention where it needs to be, away from those other people. But there's one other element, I think, one other question that haunts many writers, and I think everybody to some degree. And this is what I wrote about last week. And the piece I wrote for Huffington Post and for Author was called Everyone Has What It Takes. And it was to some degree inspired by an essay I published in the New York Times about a month and a half ago about my son who's on the autism spectrum, who was diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And the piece was called No One Is Broken. And in short, I talked about how the only way to help Sawyer was if I didn't try to fix him, because you couldn't. Sawyer was my son. You can't fix someone. You can't fix what isn't broken. And all our attempts to fix him, to get him to stop doing what he was doing and start doing what we wanted him to do, what we thought he should do, didn't work. It was when we stopped fixing him and just worked with him that we began to have success as parents with him. But there's a big difference between working with someone and teaching someone and then trying to fix them. But the temptation to fix him was great because his behavior was so unusual. And the only way for me to look at him and not see him as broken, because the behavior seemed so unusual, the behavior seemed to be the behavior of someone who wouldn't thrive and succeed in the world. I couldn't understand how someone who did the things he did would be able to thrive and succeed in the world. The only way I could see him as unbroken is if I made the decision that no one in the world was broken. Not me, not him, not Donald Trump, not Hitler, nobody, not to equate Trump to Hitler, but nobody, no matter how bizarre their behavior, not criminals, not people with cancer, not people I disagree with, no one. No one was broken. That was the only way I could possibly see him, because if anyone's broken, certainly this kid, the way he behaved, seemed broken to me. So that was what the piece was in the Times. But it led me back to this other question, another question that I think faces so many writers. I think everybody has to contend with it. And it's this simple question: Do I have what it takes? Do I have what it takes? A lot of times when I take on clients, that's one of the first questions they ask me. Am I any good? I just want you to tell me if I'm any good or not, because I don't want to waste my time doing this thing if I'm not any good. And they ask this question because, of course, as you look around the world, it seems clear that some people seem to be good at this writing thing and some people seem not to be. In fact, it's true of everything. There seems to be huge variety in terms of people's ability to do anything, not just writing. Do I have what it takes? Because there is a story circulating around the writing world, just the humanity in general, that some people have it and some people don't. You just don't have it. You just don't have what it takes. You just don't have the talent. You just don't have the ability. You just don't have the intelligence, whatever it is. And it's quite a powerful question because, and a lot of writers, I think, who sit down and want to start their writing career in particular, I think this is a question we face before we've begun to have the kind of external success that comes from practicing writing and practicing and practicing and sharing and practicing. I think it's a question that faces a lot of writers as they sit down and they have to carve out time. They have to carve out time in their life in order to write. They have to take time away probably from their family maybe, or from the little hobbies or little easy pleasures they have. They have to find the time to write. But the question is, am I any good at this? You know, do I have what it takes to be one of those writers? Because there seems to be a general consensus that some do and some don't. Some are smarter than others. Look at certain kids got really good grades in class. Certain kids didn't. Certain kids could run really fast. Certain couldn't. There seems to be such variety in people's ability to do things. Surely some have it and some don't. Well, I think that this question is debilitating in and of itself. Because if you sit down to write every day, the only questions you should be asking are, what do I want to say and have I said it? But if the question exists in your mind, do I have what it takes? Then probably when you sit down, you will also be trying to answer that question. You will write and be observing what you're writing with the question, is this the writing of someone who has what it takes? Is this as good as? Is this good enough to? Do I have what it takes? And to some degree, you will be trying to answer that question throughout your work. Do I have what it takes? Do I have what it takes? What's the evidence? How do I know? How do I know I have what it takes? I've got to know. I've got to know. If I don't have what it takes, if I don't have the talent, how do I do this? Why do this? So my answer to that is the same as my answer to working with my son. It's the only answer I've been able to come up with because I've come to understand that I certainly wrestled with that early in my writing career. I certainly wrestled with that when I was not having any success. I was having all kinds of rejection. And really, to some degree, I sat down with that question, do I have what it takes? That was the question I was answering. I'd forget to ask it, but it was always hovering there because I had no evidence from the outer world, from the publishing world, from the world of agents and editors, the people who I needed to accept what I was writing in order for me to have a career. I had no evidence from them that I had what it took. And since this story existed in our minds that some did and some didn't, what if I didn't? Then what? I loved to write. I did know that. But what if I loved to write, but I still didn't have what it takes? That seemed to be one of the stories circulating around. But eventually I began to have the kind of success I wanted with my work. And I came to understand that the work I did, where I went when I wrote, grew out of a place of supreme equality, an awareness of supreme equality between everybody. And that's because I finally made the decision that just as with my son, the only way to see him as whole, as not broken, was if no one is broken. And the only way to know that I had what it took, the only way to know that I was smart enough, talented enough, original enough, the only way to know if I had what it took was if everyone has what it takes. Everybody does. Everybody is smart enough. Everybody's original enough. And everybody's talented enough. And the reason we see variety in the world, and the reason we see people struggling, and we see some work that seems to pop and shine and seem so uniquely original, and we see other work that doesn't seem nearly as clear and in focus and doesn't seem so original to us, is not because some people have what it takes and some people don't, But what we are seeing is rather a variety of a recognition of our inherent value and inherent equality and inherent intelligence. In other words, if you don't believe everyone has what it takes, you can't. You will always be asking that question. But if you can accept that to some degree everybody has something to share and something of value, and everyone has what it takes, then you can write from that place. But if you don't believe it, then what the work you produce will be clouded by that belief that maybe you don't have what it takes. Once you can accept you have what it takes, once you can accept that you have just as much talent and originality and intelligence as all the greatest writers you've ever read, because you really do, you have access to the same stuff they do. Once you can accept that, then you can begin to tap into your own genius. I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can really do it unless you drop the story that some are better than others. You might fall into that once the writing stops, but when you go to write, I don't know how else to. I don't know how to be my most original, my most compassionate, my most interesting, unless I go into that place that knows everybody at core is equal. Everybody has what it takes. That's when I become original. That's when, because then I can drop the question and just tap into the intelligence and originality and capacity that's already there. Everybody has, that's equality. That's equality. You're not any better and you're never any worse, ever. But you just have to tap into it. So that's what I wanted to share with you today. I think it's incredibly useful to me to remember it. It's incredibly helpful to me to remember that inherent equality. And I'll tell you, I practice it at the desk all the time, of course. When I sit down to write, I have to forget about the idea of better or worse. It's why I don't like to read book reviews, honestly. It's why even though I judge competitions, I don't like to do it so much because I start getting into grading people and ranking people, and I just don't believe in it. But awards are useful to people for a lot of reasons. But it's a difficult position because ultimately I don't believe in better or worse. And so whenever I'm writing, I practice going into that place within me that knows everybody's equal, that the differences in us, all the little external differences of age and race and gender and religion and political affiliations and all of that is just a fraction of what we are, and the majority of what we are is all equal. It's all equal, looking for a different expression. And that is easy to find within me when I write, but I practice it going out into the world. I practice it by not thinking I'm better than other people, but I really have to practice by not thinking other people are better than me. If they've sold more books, or I think they're better looking, or they drive a nicer car, or whatever the reason we rank each other, I have to practice it and practice it and practice it. Practice it like walking a tightrope. I have to practice it. Nobody better, nobody worse. Nobody better, nobody worse. Try it. It's not so easy. We rank each other all the time, constantly. We're constantly comparing ourselves. This one's number one. This one's number two. I love the Olympics are great, but good Lord, the gold, the silver, the bronze, first, second, third, fourth, it's constant. It's all a game. But it can get into your psyche and you can start believing in it. In the end, you know, in the end, all the actors go on stage and this one's a bad guy and this one's a good guy and this one's a king and this one's a fool. But when the curtain goes up, they're all just actors. They're all just people. And so are we. So are we. Well, people, it doesn't look like I have anyone with questions. That's okay. I'm glad I got to share this with you. I hope it was useful. Again, if you have any questions about fearless writing and wanting to work with me, or if you'd like me to talk to your group or organization, you can go to williamkanauer.com, and there's a big old link for fearless writing, and that has all the information, including how to contact me. Now, next week, I will be talking to Helene Cordona, the actress and poet, and she's a lovely lady, and I always enjoy talking to her, but I'm going to be doing another Fearless Writing Masterclass after that on the 6th of September, so don't miss that. And, go do what you love, people. Go tap into your inherent intelligence, your inherent originality, to that part of you that is equal to absolutely everybody. No better, no worse. It's totally original. Take care. I'll talk to you later.